Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast, the most famous podcast that David Johnston and Kelly Blades have ever produced before in their lives. I am sitting here with my friend and cohort, David Johnston.
Hello.
And then...
Oh, sorry, and I'm...
and you blow at this.
I didn't know what we were supposed to do.
That's right. So I'm sitting here at 25 seconds. I'm sitting here with my friend and cohort, David Johnston from Toronto, Ontario.
And I'm sitting here with the very beautiful and very smart Kelly Blades.
Aw, shucks.
Well, I can't see you, so I'm picturing it in my head.
It's theater of the mind.
Yeah.
That's what we're creating here.
It's way better than real life.
Oh, for sure, my friend, for sure. So, David, what have you been doing this week?
Oh, this week's been busy. I was out paddling last weekend. I was working on practicing some rolling in that. Here in Toronto, the water has just started to get, it used to be in the cold burning stage, and now it's just in the bitter cold stage. So,
nice.
So I was out working on some rolling.
All right, then.
How about yourself? What have you been doing?
Well, what have I been doing? I've been mowing grass. I know it sounds really, really sexy to hear a professional kayaker in their normal life mowing grass. But I've been doing a lot of planning for upcoming events and whatnot. So I've been thinking quite a bit about the kayaking, but I haven't been in a boat in, I want to say about a week and a half.
It's tragic.
It is tragic, but, you know, that happens.
Right.
You can't have cake for every meal.
Right.
Wait, and I never understood why. I got to be honest.
Well, there's, you know, a moment on the lips, years on the hips. That's what they say.
That's nice. I like that. I'm going to remember that. And now I'm craving chocolate cake. Speaking of which, I think we need to get a sponsor that is chocolate cake. I wonder if people from Sara Lee will be listening to this because it's delicious. Let me just say that.
So that would be a great sponsor.
It really would be a great sponsor. And by the way, if you folks want to sponsor our podcast, hey, give us a little jingle at kayakmainline@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at, what do you think, David?
At kayakmainline.com.
Hey, that's pretty, well.
No, maybe not at kayakmainline.
Just kayakmainline. That's how the Twitter works. You ever use that Twitter? Have you tweeted?
Once in a while, yes.
You have tweeter?
Yep.
You're a very prolific tweeter, actually.
Oh, thank you.
You tweet like a mofo. Is that legal to say?
My mother would have something to say about it.
About mofo?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think she's listening. Is she part of our demographic?
No. She lives in fear that what I do.
Now, is your mother local? Where's your mother from?
She's from Ottawa, so that's about 5 hours from here.
Oh, that's a perfect distance for a mother to be from.
Yeah, though the problem is that they, and I don't mind saying it publicly, they come to visit, that means they sleep over. And that's the problem.
Oh, so they won't get a hotel? Are they relatively cheap people?
Relatively cheap is not the right way to describe it.
Ooh, I feel like we're digging up some bones from the Johnston closet.
No, that's fine.
He's not listening now.
No, they won't.
Trouble. Yeah. Well, that's good. So you're out rolling in beautiful Lake Ontario.
Yep.
Off of Toronto.
Yeah, I had my neoprene hoodie on and still got an ice cream headache.
Oh, you did get an ice cream headache.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, that's bound to happen.
I think it'll be another 3 weeks to a month before it starts to get warm enough.
So, I myself worked on a little whitewater course. Not a whitewater course as in, you know, something, a course where people would do whitewater, but a little course where we taught people how to do whitewater.
Oh, okay.
And it was a very beginner course, so we didn't actually flip over once. Well, at least I didn't.
Okay. You students were all over the place?
Yeah, so I wouldn't know what the ice cream headache feels like this year.
That's probably the same as normal.
I don't know. It's been a while since I've had the ice cream headache, so I'm glad for that.
Yeah, well, I was out working on rolling. Like, for me, rolling is I've known how to roll for several years, but it's the one skill that I constantly have to keep coming back to work on it. So
why do you think that is?
I don't know what it is. I lose my confidence, and then I go out and do it a little bit, and it starts to come back, and then I go, yeah, I can do it, and then it all falls apart. So, yeah.
When was the last time you swam?
A couple of years ago.
No.
When I need it, it's there, but I never think it's going to be there.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's a therapy issue.
Yeah, I think you need a counselor on this one first. It's just my feeling on it. Well, we were talking about your mother and now your inability to have confidence in your rolling.
Yeah, there's years of issues.
Well, it's okay. But people didn't come in here to this podcast to hear our little foibles now, did they?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe they did. I don't know. In which case, wow, you should be out paddling.
Yeah.
But we do want to talk quite extensively. We've got some news articles that we're going to deal with here in just a few minutes that are kayaking related, as well as we have a wonderful interview. I did an interview, was very fortunate enough to have an interview with Danny Mongo earlier this fine day. And, of course, if you don't know Danny Mongo, you will after this. He's a charming little fellow. He works for Warner Paddles and really is the face of Warner Paddles these days.
Yeah, I've seen his I've seen his videos on the YouTube.
Yeah, those aren't probably the greatest depiction of Danny. I mean, he's better live is what I'm saying.
Right.
Right. So you know those bands. You ever seen a band that you went to and went, oh, yeah, they sound okay? Or, you know, listen to it on the CD?
Yeah.
So that's dating me, huh? On the digital iTunes?
On the 8-track?
Right, and the 8-track?
Yeah.
On the old phonograph? Every time it rains, and it's from heaven. You know, that kind of thing.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So you listen to them on the recording, and you're thinking, yeah, they're pretty good. But then you go live, and you're like, you know, just absolutely blown away.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, he's good when he's being recorded. But when you really get him live, that's when you need to see him. So he's a lot like an exhibit more than to really go see him in concert. Go see Danny Mongo in concert. But and then we've got our coveted point of contention.
Yes.
Just fantastic. It's a really good segment where we want to disagree, but we rarely do.
That's actually pretty true.
There you go. So shall we go on to the news, my friend?
Yeah, there's been a ton of news this past week.
Well, tell me about the ton of news.
And they're related to the kayak paddling nature world. Big story that young Freya Hoffmeister, who's been for the last, I don't know, seems like year, but she's been paddling around South America.
South Africa.
That's her next one. So, yeah, so she's been working on that, and she just, a short while ago, she just finished the first of three legs. So that's a pretty huge accomplishment.
And she started way, way down in the south.
Yep. Argentina.
Argentina.
So there's three legs. It's roughly 8,000 kilometers. What's that in miles?
14 miles.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
I'm not very good with the conversion rate. I gotta be honest with you. I'm not a math guy.
It's not listed here. You know, she's European.
Right.
So it's 8,000. Each one is 8,000 kilometers for a total of 24,000 kilometers. So it's certainly nothing to sneeze at, that's for sure. So she's finished the first leg. So that's pretty big news. And that leg took her 228 days to complete.
228 days.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, eh?
Yeah, I mean, my mind boggles. Like, you and I both know Freya.
Right.
And she is, and this is not going to sound kind, but I mean this in the kindest way. She's a workhorse.
She's a machine.
She is. She's like the Terminator.
Like an automaton.
Very much so. But she does have girl feelings.
Yeah.
She does, so she's not completely devoid. But when she gets out in the water, she's like a puppy on a root. She just goes.
Well, it was interesting following along with her blog where she was posting it. And outside of storms, like she only took like handfuls of days off over, you know, say over a 2-week period. She was taking maybe 1 or 2 days off at that. I mean, she was stormbound for a bit, so with high winds and that. But, man, it's pretty serious.
You know, and it's not like she chose a small continent to go around.
Right.
You know, there are people who have done continents, but South America? I mean, that's the real deal. I don't know if you've looked at a map, but it's several feet wide.
Oh, yeah. It's maybe seven.
At least seven.
The thing to me is it's not even so much the distance. So she started down in Argentina, and she's going clockwise. So now she's in, or at least the segment ended, in Chile. Chile.
Chile.
There we go.
As the locals say.
But the part to me that's the next segment is the country she's going through now, which are going to be so dangerous. So that's, she's going to start it again in 4 months' time. So in the fall, it'll kick in. But she's got, and the big ones is Peru, Colombia, and Venezuela are the major ones she's going around. And Colombia is certainly not, you know, it's not like staying at the YMCA every night. So
no,
it'll be quite interesting.
Let me state for the record that I've grown up in and around Detroit entire life, and that's a little intimidating for me.
Right.
You know, I have seen the seedy side of things, and, you know, I paddled the Detroit River quite a bit. And, yeah, Colombia's no joke, man. I mean, they cut people's heads off and play soccer with them and try to reattach them.
After the fact.
Afterwards, yes. And, yeah, that's just frightening. They have, I don't know if you know that, but they have automatic weapons down there.
I've heard.
They have guns.
Now, did you ever read Don Starkel's book, Paddle to the Amazon?
I am not literate.
Okay.
How'd that go?
Oh, crazy. Well, so Don Starkel, he actually just recently died, but his thing was paddling from Winnipeg, Canada, down through the U.S., the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Mississippi.
Did you say Mississippi?
Yeah, I added, you know, a touch A to the end there.
Oh, yeah.
And then through Mexico, and eventually crossed Colombia, Venezuela, and worked away inland, and then down the Amazon River. So that was back in 82, 84, somewhere around there. I remember that book when I was 9 or 10, vividly reading this, thinking this is the greatest, craziest adventure ever. And in that, he talks a lot about their worst problems they had was Panama, Colombia. Like, they got attacked by pirates. They got hostage for a while. They were held under gunpoint. You name it.
How weak a pirate do you have to be to go after a kayak? I mean, come on now. If you're a pirate and you're thinking that kayak, that one dude in the kayak, I'm going to see what he's got.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a slow day of pirating.
Well, you know, the other part about that story is the fact, well, these guys are in canoes. So here they're doing all this ocean paddling where they're going around the Gulf of Mexico, mm-hmm. And they're working their way down. It was like an old school, you know, large, 18, 21 foot canoe. Like it was for three people, but so, I mean, the fact they were on a canoe on that is the next story, but still, you know, in the world of things to attack, pirates are about the same as stealing candy from, you know, a 10-year-old.
Right. Well, here's an element that you're not thinking of. They did start off in Winnipeg, and I've been to Winnipeg.
Right.
And pretty much anything sounds better than hanging out in Winnipeg. I mean, I don't want to offend any of our Canadian listeners right off the bat, but the same holds true for, like, Boise, Idaho.
Right.
You know, it's – or, you know, any state in our union with an I in it. Pretty much there's better stuff to do. So, yeah, if I grew up in Winnipeg, I'd think, yeah, that's a pretty good idea just to get out, to get south.
This is the only way to do it.
That's right. The hostage, the pirates attack, and you're like, oh, as long as I'm not in Winnipeg, this is fantastic. This is wonderful.
It's all uphill from there.
Exactly. Go ahead, shoot me in the shoulder. What do I care from Winnipeg? All right, I don't mean that. I love the Winnipegians. Right? Winnipeggers?
I don't know, but I think you're going in the wrong direction.
Which were the Winnipeg?
Winnipeggers. I don't think they're up for that.
I like Winnipeggers. Back to
that's so funny. So she's doing it. It'll be the real key thing to watch. What ends up happening over this second leg is certainly the most dangerous. So
yeah. Well, now you'd mentioned earlier on that she's been to Buenos Aires.
That's where she started.
She started in Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
Do you see the irony of Buenos Aires?
No.
Isn't that where a lot of the Germans went after that little skirmish they had in the 40s.
Oh. Yeah.
So I think it's a little funny that she started there. And I'd love to see what she has to say about Paraguay, because apparently that's a big spot there.
My only connection to Buenos Aires is there was a Get Smart episode based around that.
About Buenos Aires?
Chaos.
Yes.
The bad guys. They set up a sonic boom machine that was
of course
take over Washington, and apparently the sonic boom machine was set up in down in Buenos Aires.
And of course Agent 99 had to help out being the real brains behind the outfit. She was a lovely woman.
She was. Yeah. Very. But though Max held his own, I feel.
Yep. I think you're absolutely right. He did. With the shoe phone. Who was the guy in the trash can?
That was, 86? No, Max was 86.
He was 86, because that's an American thing. I don't know if it's a Canadian thing as well, but to 86 something is to end it. It's a mistake.
Oh, no, I didn't get that.
See, that's why you have me around. For
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm not literate, but I know my TV nonsense.
So that's Priya. That's her thing.
And we wish her well.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic that she's doing things that none of us are crazy enough or dumb enough to try.
I definitely live my life vicariously through this trip. I've been a third of the way around South America now.
Have you?
Yeah.
That's great. And she did – where was she at last time? She did Australia?
Yep.
I like the fact that, you know, I made jokes about it earlier on that she's biting off a whole big continent, but she started off with a smaller continent.
That's true.
So maybe that was just training for, you know, doing the bigger continent. And then what's next? She's going to paddle around the world?
Yeah, I think that could be doable. You just get the directions on Google Maps.
I think that's probably pretty easy at this point. I mean, you've been everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet she can't make a cake like Sarah Lee. I don't know if she can make a cake. She probably can make a cake. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
She can make ice cream. I'll say that much.
Can she?
You don't know about that?
Oh, yeah, she's got an ice cream. And
that's how she funds her she's got a secret black market ice cream shop. Actually, I believe what it is she owns two ice cream shops in the greater Berlin area or Hamburg or whatnot. And, so she's a small business owner. And she makes sure everything's going right. And then she hops in a boat and paddles around a continent or two.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Just goes to show you. So that's our first, and we wish her well. That's our first news story. Priya doing her best, and she's going to be back on the water in, you said, about 4 months?
Yeah. So she's going to take a break, I guess, get the business sorted out back home. And
have a little Haagen-Dazs?
I think so.
And then right back on the water, and she's a champ. So hopefully we will be interviewing her one of these days in the not-so-distant future. Stick around and stay tuned on that one.
Where are we going now? We're going to somewhere, California.
We're going to magically going to California. Home.
Great white shark attacked kayak off the California coast.
Okay, a shark attack off the California coast.
Yeah, and not just a shark attack. Great.
Was
white.
It a shark attack with a shark with lasers?
No, but there was somebody who put sharks on lasers this week.
Yes, I actually saw that news story.
Everything came together for that.
He caught a lot of hell out of that, didn't he?
There was not people were not impressed. But meanwhile, I was completely impressed and I loved it.
Yeah, I think the vast majority of people thought that's friggin' awesome, and I bet Mike Meyer was just stunned. He probably was at home going, "Man, this is friggin' great." And when the news called him, he's like, "Oh, I don't condone it," but he's sitting back doing the fist pump.
Oh yeah, 100%.
He wrote that 15 years ago or whatever he did. That's good stuff. So, but that's not the sharks with the laser beams on their freaking head. We are talking about a great white shark attack.
Yeah. So two guys are out. Sorry.
Fishing.
They were kayak fishing and they were, I'm trying to see how far offshore, but it was during the afternoon and they were fishing. They had caught some halibut and some rock cod. Mm-hmm. And just then out of nowhere, this shark came in. Bumped one guy over, knocked him out of his boat, and took a big chomp out of that boat.
Now, you say that, but you really need to create the theater of the mind for our listeners here. He not only knocked him out, so you're making it sound like, oh, the shark was just kind of lollygagging around and bumped him, and oh, out the guy goes. Right. Not true, my friend, not true. He was actually, as sources say, the gentleman with him, he was knocked 4 to 5 feet up and out of the water.
I don't know about that. 5 feet's pretty high. But anyways, I'll work with you on this.
Have you seen these things? It's like a cow with giant teeth that's 35 miles an hour. I mean, I'm a farm boy. And quite honestly, if a cow decided it was going to knock you over, I could see it knocking you several feet up.
It was – so what they're saying is 12 to 14 feet long. And as it flipped over, it swam by him close enough that he said the tail touched him. I would freak out.
Yep. I would be catatonic and waiting to die.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed. So he gets back in his boat. They flip it over. I guess he must have been on a sit on top or something.
I would imagine, but I don't know.
Yeah. So the shark gets back in, gets out of the water.
Right. So from what I read, he scurried back onto his boat as quickly as possible, and he had gotten on it while it was upside down. And his buddy said, "Hey, we need to get out of here. I'm going to go get your paddle, and when I get back, you better have your boat flipped right side up and in the boat."
Right.
Now that to me is a little intimidating. Like, okay, let's say you and I, for whatever reason, we decide we're going fishing.
Right.
And I get the piss knocked out of me by a 12 to 14 foot shark. Not just a shark.
Right.
But one of the five great man-eating sharks of all time.
Seriously. Yes.
I get knocked down. I have the will to bring myself back out of the water and scurry onto my boat. If you were to look at me and say, "Hey, I'm going to leave you alone for a few minutes with the friggin' shark that just knocked you over while you scurry back in the water and get your boat righted."
Right.
I think the least dangerous thing you have to worry about is the shark coming back. Because I would punch a man who said that.
Hold on. I'll go deal with the paddle. You just deal with everything to get yourself back in, and you're likely going to be back in the water again.
Okay. Exactly. That's wow.
I could see how that could be interpreted as a bad thing.
You can see how that would be interpreted as a bad. You are a son of a bitch, my friend. That is ridiculous.
Well, what's interesting about it is they get up, they're so set up, and they're heading back into shore. And there's this quote in here in the article that says, "We got back to shore as fast as I could, even though the kayak was taking on a bunch of water from the bite." And this is the cool part, is the bite looks to be around 20 inches long and 22 inches wide.
All right, for everybody at home, yeah, put your hands out about shoulder width, depending on how big your shoulders are. And that's about how long the bite was. And then look at that again from a different angle and realize that your chest cavity could fit in that bite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, see, this is another reason just to stay on shore.
Yeah. People make fun of us all the time for being Great Lakes paddlers. I've never been attacked by a shark in the Great Lakes. Never once. Never thought of it.
Yeah, wouldn't even occur to me.
Nope. That's what they do. Sharks. See, I'm not – here's the thing. I'm not afraid of sharks. Not in the least. I just have a healthy respect for the fact that I'm lower on the food chain.
Right.
I grew up with Jaws. I think it was 1976. I was just a wee lad. I went into the theater with, of all people, my grandmother. My grandmother took me to see Jaws when I was about 7 years old. And never was afraid of the movie, but I have always had a healthy respect for the sharks.
And phenomenal.
Yeah, so I'm not afraid, but I understand that I'm just an appetizer.
Now, this isn't the first one, because I was reading about a very similar shark attack last week, where someone got knocked out of the boat, but the shark ended up going after the kayak and gave like two good solid bites before it took off. It wasn't a great bite, but it also did another number on that boat as well. So
it went after the boat and left the dude to swim away.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's best case scenario, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What kind of shark was it? They got to know what kind of shark it was.
I forget what it was. I mean, I could make it up, but I don't know.
You can. Yeah. I'm cool with that if you want to make it up.
I'm pretty sure it was a Mako.
It was a Mako shark, yes. Now, here's another thing, too, that great whites, yeah, they're scary. In modern culture, great whites, thank you, Steven Spielberg, have made, like, the news for being the scariest sharks.
Right.
Oh, no, my friend.
Oh, no, the bull
shark. The bull shark is the bad boy in the block.
Really?
Oh, yes. They found bull sharks 90 miles up the Mississippi.
No.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Think about that. Think, you know, maybe you've had a bad experience with the beach living, right? You're in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And every Sunday you go down to the beach and you're like, "Well, this is great." And then you have a bad experience with a shark. Mm. So you say, "Screw that. I'm heading an hour and a half inland. I don't have to worry about it." only to be out crawdad fishing one day and you see a friggin' bull shark. One of the five great man-eaters.
Really?
Frightening.
I would freak out.
Yeah, they've actually, I don't know if it's an evolutionary thing or what, but their gills are far more adaptable to breathing brackish water.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. Which is bad because, in my opinion, if they find fertile hunting north, you know, up the Mississippi or in brackish water, evolutionarily, they're going to change. And there's going to come a time when sharks are moving into fresh water a little bit more.
How long can I expect them on the Great Lakes?
15 days.
This is the year.
27 minutes. I have a supercomputer in my garage. And I've actually figured this out. Again, not afraid of bull sharks. Just understand that if they had feet, I'd be living in a cave someplace in the hills.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Because they're angry.
Yeah, we're talking about other big predators.
Mm-hmm.
Our last big story.
This is my favorite story. And this is not a nautical story. However, it's perfect because it deals with the Scottish.
Man photographs cheetahs attacking wife. So where are we talking? South Africa.
South Africa.
A husband and wife and family. They're at they call it a petting zoo.
A petting zoo with cheetahs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm used to ducks and goats.
Right. We have cute little lambs.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody around here says, oh, honey, keep your fingers away from the lambs because they've got a little bit of a nip to them.
So they're in the petting zoo. In the pen. And there's two cheetahs.
Right.
And they're, you know, the family's standing around and the husband's taking photos. And next thing you know, one of the cheetahs takes a good swat after the lady and cuts her head all up.
Cuts her head up. Now,
yeah.
Here's the kicker. What does the husband do? Because you and I are married, guys.
He did what, you know, everybody shouldn't be doing. But, you know, so he continued taking photos of the whole thing. So, you know, so in my head I'm picturing, it's coming closer. Doof, doof, doof. And he's like, hold on, I'm looking for the good shot.
That's right.
It's in the San Francisco Chronicle covered the story, and there's like six photos. And, yeah, he was there, and he got it from all angles.
Remember what I said back a few minutes ago about getting attacked by a shark and then you paddling away to get the paddle? Again, the butt-whooping I would get from my wife if I said, honey, hold that pose while the cheetah's mauling you.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's stunning.
Yeah, that's the type of thing that you would see on the old divorce court TV.
Yeah. Yeah, and how easy is that divorce going to be? I mean, think about that. You go into court and usually divorce – and I've never been divorced. But usually divorces are very, very contentious and I don't know if they're getting divorced. But I'm just speculating, wildly speculating on this one. So they go in and the wife wants everything and the judge says – well, do you have any evidence that would indicate that you deserve everything? Yes. Here are the pictures from my cheetah mauling where my husband continued to take the pictures.
And the guy would be like, but hey, we got a good story out of it.
That's right. So look, we made the San Francisco Chronicle.
Exactly.
Fantastic. I wonder if he could actually levy that into something. Because if that happened to me, I would certainly go on like Dr. Phil.
Yeah. Or maybe like a reenactment reality TV show.
Oh, when cheetahs attack at a petting zoo.
Yeah, where they do lots of like zooms and close-ups and black and white.
That's got to be on one of those 100,000 Ways to Die show.
Yeah. Though she was okay in the sense that, I mean, she's still alive, but she got a bunch of bite and puncture marks. And they said that her scalp, the back of her head, was sliced open.
Now, one of the things I thought was very funny in this article is that she actually said – oh, you could tell that they weren't trying to kill me. They were just being playful.
Mm.
How do you assess that?
Mm. You know who said that? Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, exactly. That was the last dude to say that. Look how that happened.
Yeah, it's still too soon. We can't talk about that.
I think we can. I'm ex-circus folk. I can talk about that. I'll get naughty letters. But, you know, and funny thing, folks, for those of you who don't know me, I did spend a little time with the circus, with the show back in the old days. I went to Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Combined Circus Clown College back in the 80s.
And, hold on here.
Yes?
Were you a dress-up clown? Or were you Walk Me Through What You Did.
What does that mean, dress-up clown?
Well, like, did you have makeup on in the whole show?
Well, sure.
Oh, okay. I guess that's the basic parts of being a clown, so okay.
Yeah, what other types of clowns are there? The crying on the inside clown, the serial killer clown, and, you know, the guys who work for a living. Yeah, and so is that it about the news?
That's what we got.
Excellent. So stay tuned right now. We've got an interview with Danny Mongo. And just sit back and enjoy while we talk about Danny Mongo.
You can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Mainline. Or if you're old school and like to email, that's kayakmainline@gmail.com. kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed Kayak Mainline.
I am online here with Danny Mongo, friend and fellow industry person. Welcome to Kayak Mainline. How are you today, Danny?
Things are going pretty good, Kelly. The sun has come out in the northeast of the U.S., and I'm pretty excited to be soaking up some vitamin D.
Where are you at now?
I am in beautiful Saratoga Springs, New York. So once I get off the phone here with you, I'm going to go play some bets on some ponies and see how that goes for me.
I know you follow the ponies quite a bit. But, I mean, really, you're into unsanctioned cage fighting when you're betting normally, right?
True, that, and, well, we don't want to go into some of the bets I make, but, you know, we all know that occasionally a chicken will put on, like, a little boxing glove, if you will, and they'll go at it, too. So, yeah, I'm pretty much open to any kind of gambling.
I've never seen the chicken with a boxing glove. I've seen it with other accoutrements on their beak, but never the boxing glove.
I think it's kind of code word, you know. I'm going to have some code word here.
Right, I get it. Nice. Well, let's get at the hard-hitting questions that we like to – we like to bring to Kayak Mainline. What's your favorite color?
I am definitely a hot color guy.
Are you?
Here's a funny story. I have actually never paddled a boat that was not yellow or orange. So I'm definitely sticking to the yellows, the oranges, and the reds for sure.
Okay, fair enough. Now, do you think that the like birds of prey out there in the water and maybe sharks are a little more attracted or less attracted to that boat color?
I've heard rumor that sharks are attracted to yellow, but luckily I've never come into any contact with any. But for whatever reason, it's been my thing since I was just started on the scene when I was 16, and I've kind of stuck to it.
All right. So that actually leads us into the real question that I wanted to start off with. So how did you get into – everybody knows you, Danny Mongo, from Warner Paddles. You've been working for Warner for many years now, and you've jumped into the upper echelon of the Warner community. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But how did you, young Danny Mongo, the little fella from Long Island, get into kayaking?
Well, I'll give you the quick version of it. So I was I grew up a pretty chubby kid. So bodyboarding made more sense than stand-up surfing. I got pretty good at it, even though I was not your average proportioned ocean rider. And I was a sponsored bodyboarder for a surf shop that happened to be owned by a canoe and kayak shop. And I was 16 years old. One day I was in the shop getting some wax, and my dad had driven me there, and I come back outside with my little bar of wax, and the old man's gone. I can't find him. And this is before cell phones, and I wait for an hour, and finally the phone at the shop rings, and it's him. And I'm like, dude, where'd you go? And he's like, I'm not coming back and picking you up until you get a job. I'm like, oh, okay, that's one way to do it. So I was like, yeah, this is a great place to work. I'll hang out at the surf shop. I'll check out chicks. I'll talk about surfing. But they didn't hire me for that. They hired me for the canoe and kayak stuff. And my old man raised us as an offshore fishing captain. And as far as I was concerned, a boat started at 36 feet. I didn't know what a canoe was or a kayak for that matter. But that kind of started the whole thing. And really from there, I've never had a job for more than a couple of weeks or a summer that was outside of the paddle sports industry. So since 1988, it's the only thing I've ever done.
Wow. So now I understand. I mean, I've seen the old video clips, and I don't mean the ones you're thinking of immediately. I'm not going to bring those up. But the ones of you whitewater boating. So, again, you're a Long Island kid. Your pop's a fisherman, and here you are working. And I assume this was in Long Island that you got the job.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so how do you make that transition from doing the whole – you know, putting butts in boats out on the sound to running out to the mountains and running steep creeks and whatnot.
So the kayak shop that I was working for, the owner was actually distributing Piranha Whitewater too. And it was really cool, right? We had all these long touring boats, but then we had these short little fat boats. So I would always teach out of those. And I had gotten a new tattoo, and I knew I couldn't get it wet, so I couldn't go surfing. So I was like, I know, I'll go get my fix, and I'll go ride some waves in this kayak thing here. And of course, I paddled out in the ocean and get hammered and swam and got the tattoo wet anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, I was kind of hooked on paddling on bumpy water. And my relationship with Piranha grew, and those guys started asking me to come up to the mountains with them.
Nice.
So I really fell in love with it. You know, I'd never spent a lot of time in the mountains and the streams and the hiking into the river, and the whole thing really grabbed me. And I knew I wasn't going to figure out if I was any good living on an island. The closest whitewater was like 3 hours away, and that was if you didn't hit traffic, and you always hit traffic on Long Island.
Sure.
So in 1999, I decided to pull up the tent stakes and head down to Asheville, North Carolina, and see if I was going to be any good at this thing.
Well, and so that started your relationship with your now residency in Asheville.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember the first time we drove down to the Green River, I was so nervous. And I think there's something like 13 switchbacks on the road down to the Green. And I was in the back of the van. And, you know, again, I really didn't kayak much, so I didn't even have a creek boat. Between the switchbacks and me being nervous and all of the spray glue I was using to quickly outfit my boat, I spent the first day at the put into the Green throwing up all over the place.
And there were no recreational beverages involved in that.
No, afterwards there were. It seemed to be the norm usually at that juncture of business for sure. But no, I was pretty nervous, so I tried to stay sober the first time down.
Well, I'm finding you and I have, you know, I don't want anyone to think that we don't know each other really, really well. Obviously, we do. Anybody who knows us knows that in most occasions we're inseparable when we're in the same geographical location. But I'm always amused, and I think you probably will back me up on this, that the difference between the drinking in the whitewater community and the drinking in the sea kayaking community is the quality of alcohol and the time in which you start.
Oh, this is certainly true. Yeah, I mean, the whitewater community definitely likes the party, and they get it on pretty early. And there's definitely days, especially on the Green River Narrows race, which is always the first Saturday of November. There's been a day or two where maybe I had a few cocktails on the way down the river. I'm not going to lie to you.
Sure. Well, it was a kinder, gentler time back then, Danny.
Certainly was.
Nobody judged guys like you and me too much that we cared about or that we remembered. So, yeah, and it's also the quality. So you got sort of the light beer. I mean, the high-end beer for a whitewater paddler is Miller Genuine, whereas sea kayakers will drink the Scotch.
Correct, yeah. I've never – as I moved up from I would say as I expanded my horizons from whitewater to sea kayaking, I definitely got a taste for better liqueurs, if you will.
Nice. I still haven't made that bridge yet. I still won't drink the better liqueurs. I'll leave that to you. I'm still a redneck from way back, but good on you for drinking that stuff, I say. So excellent. So 16 years old, you're in Long Island Sound. You make the move down to Asheville, and you were a team paddler for Asheville or for Piranha for a while in Asheville. And how'd you make that move? Because I know you worked with Piranha for a while. So how'd you make that move into making that your career choice?
Well, it just seemed like the thing to do. You know, at the time, you know, I was really honored to be considered a team paddler for Piranha. You know, the Northeast was really far behind where places like Colorado and the Southeast were. So, you know, I was essentially a quote-unquote team paddler standing next to guys who were world-class boaters. So I never really took it to go to my head. So I would always be in the warehouse helping them unload boats and ship boats out. I wanted to say thank you as many ways as I could. So, you know, it was a great opportunity. They offered me the job to be the receiving and shipping manager. And again, I really wanted to go and paddle some white water. We had a great team. Denver McClure, who's still with the company in R&D and customer service, really taught me how to kayak, honestly. I really thought I was a good boater, but I owe a lot to Denver. And so any opportunity I had to work with a guy like that, Jim Hager, I jumped all over it.
Right on. So, you know, as we're talking here, you and I have both made our bones in the industry, you know, as grassroots guys. You talk about how you started at a gear shop. I did as well. You're a shipping manager for Piranha, team paddler, and you moved on from there and ascended the ranks into Impex, and now you're working with Warner. You started off as a team paddler for Warner back in the day, and you got the job as a regional sales rep. Regional sales rep would be the way to describe it. And now your title is?
Right now I am the regional sales manager and head of field marketing for Warner Paddles, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense on paper, but I'll tell you that it's the greatest job a guy could ever want. And not a day goes by that I don't feel blessed. And not a morning goes by that I don't wake up and really demand myself to get out there and challenge myself. Because, man, you know, this is a killer opportunity, and I want to repay everybody at Werner. And not only that, but people in the community. You know, people really support Werner paddles. And you go to symposiums, you go to whitewater races, and now you go to SUP events, stand-up paddling, and people love our stuff. So I want to say thank you to them and let them know that, hey, we're still legit. We're out here coaching, and we're running rivers, and we're surfing waves, and we're just like you, and thank you so much for your business. So, and it's a funny title. What does it really mean? Well, we could spend hours talking about that, but the way I see it is I get paid to get people stoked on paddling and say thank you for all their support.
So the big question then that I would have is, again, you were a grassroots guy, and it sounds like – and I know actually – you know, that you still are a very grassroots person, but now you have to look at the bigger picture of Werner and see where things are going and, you know, play corporate executive as one of your hats. How do you set up that balance between still being that guy in the water? And for those of you who don't know Danny, he is that guy in the water. He's there at every event I'm at. And when he's not there, he's talking to me constantly about what I need to do at that event to represent him and represent Werner. But he's a very grassroots guy, but you're also, you know, one of the guys now that sort of drives the company in some way. So how do you find that balance?
Well, I think it's developing your own style, right? You know, so, you know, when I walk in a room, you know, I'm going to have my khakis on, but they're going to say Patagonia, not Dockers. And yeah, sure, I have a shoe on, but, you know, they're surfer Chinooks. And, you know, I want to make sure that although I can walk into a room with my shirt tucked in and I can talk business with our biggest accounts and ask them how we can do a better job for them so in turn they can do a better job for our end customers, I never want to lose who I am. You know, I can't be fake. It's just not who I am. And so I want to let them know that, hey, man, I'm here at this meeting and I'm dressed for success and I'm going to represent what I feel is one of the best companies in the outdoor industry. But, hey, don't be upset. My wetsuit is outside drying on the car while I'm talking to you. So,
right on.
You know, it's being who I am but yet trying to be a grown-up at the same time.
That's the hard part, being that grown-up thing, isn't it?
It is, especially when you're 5'4". You know, most of my pants kind of are pretty short. You know, I think back to the great movie with Dudley Moore, who was shamelessly overlooked by the Academy for his role portraying Arthur. And he said, easy for you to say when you have 40 pairs of short pants in your closet.
Hookers, I just thought we were doing great. Yes, Arthur. What do you think, by the way? Have you seen the new version of Arthur with Russell Brand?
I have. Reservations. I refuse to watch that movie. You can't remake that movie. I mean, you don't remake Old Yeller, do you? I mean, you know, it's
well, the dog died at the end. You can't remake it. That's the problem.
But I mean, he gave everything he had for that role.
He really did, didn't he? I think, you know, back in those days, they could actually shoot the dog tied up against the tree and they could get away with it. There was no PETA back then.
There's a possibility that dog might have gotten shot for realism.
Exactly. I kind of think that they actually hired Clint Eastwood and Charlton Heston to come in and do the job for him. That was a terrible thing. I still cry at that movie. Anyway, we digress. You mentioned SUP, and that is a huge thing. Now, I don't talk about SUP on the Kayak Mainline podcast because it's it's stand-up paddling. Not that I have anything against it. But that's really where it seems like all the marketing for the paddle sports industry is going because it's such, you know, it's growing so prolifically. So the question I have for you is while you're growing this SUP line, what can kayakers look forward to, with innovative designs, innovative product, or is Werner just sitting back on its big fat corporate butt saying, you guys have had enough. It's time to move on.
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, getting out to the events, the number one question we always ask is, what would you like to see from us? And, you know, we can't be everything to everybody. I have a lot of friends out there who are passionate Greenland paddlers. And I have some friends out there who really would love to see Werner do a wing. And at the end of the day, to create products at the level we do, and let me remind you that everything we do is still handcrafted in the USA. It's hard to be able to make a lot of those products when there's not a lot of volume behind it. And does that take our focus away from making great kayak paddles, both whitewater and touring? And that's where we got to draw the line sometimes. But, you know, if there's an innovative new product that the industry needs out there, well, we're keeping our eyes and ears open and we'd love to, build what people need. But right now we feel the line is super solid, and we're willing to just keep pumping out good product and keeping people happy.
Excellent. I like to hear that. But, I mean, what I'm hearing from you is if something else came along, if the paradigm shifted and people really wanted to do X, Warner would be quick to respond, as it has in the past.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Kelly. One thing Warner is not is quick to respond. Warner is open to listen. Warner is open to think of what's possible. But quick has never been our thing, only because so much effort does go into what we build. So the idea is, how do we build this so that we're not just doing a, hey, just like me kind of thing? We want to make sure that the stuff we do is innovative and it's also strong enough, yet light enough swing weight, and has the features people want that we're proud to put the Warner logo on it. So yeah, if something comes around, that's great. We'll certainly listen. And part of my new role sitting on the new product team is we do have some pretty cool stuff that we're looking at in the pipe. And will it all come to fruition? It's hard to say. But we have a pretty great team of people who know what paddlers want. And if we don't know, we're certainly asking. So
right on. You mentioned lightweight paddles. Isn't that just a typical way for you corporate bigwigs to take our money as paddlers? Or is there really a reason for lightweight paddles? He said knowingly. Of course I'm leading you on this one, Danny.
Well, I met Werner First Sr. in 2006, and he told me why it was his passion to create a better paddling light swing weight paddle. And what it came down to was more fun on the water. You know, he wanted to take his family out and go and enjoy themselves, and they couldn't do it with heavy gear. They started the family paddling when they were just little kids, and Martha, his wife, was not a very big lady. She was short, and man, lighter swing weight gear and better paddling gear allowed them to go on to that next island, stay out for that extra day. And man, it was something he was really, really passionate about. Still is to this day. I love spending time with Werner. So, you know, is a light swing weight paddle a gimmick? Well, certainly I think it could be, you know, because as Werner will always say, we're not the lightest out there. We could build a lighter paddle, but how is somebody like a Kelly Blades, who's a bigger, stronger, rough water paddler, how's it going to hold up for him?
So. I believe you mean gorilla in a human suit, and I appreciate that. So, and thank you, by the way. You've always been very kind about my weight. So can you tell us – no, you can. You can tell us. I know the story. You know the story. I've told the story a million times. You've told the story a million times. But I want everybody listening to hear the Warner story from you because it's really cool.
So, you know, Bruce Furr, who is the youngest family member, he's the youngest boy, is now the president of the company. And I'm really proud to say one of my best friends. And the more time I spend with him, you know, like you would with any friend, you hear more stories about the family. So, man, the story is deep and it's amazing. It's almost a movie or a storybook. But the real quick version is Werner and Marta had fallen in love in their home country of Switzerland. And their family wouldn't let them marry because they were different religions. They fled to Canada, and then from Canada made their passage into the Adirondacks first and worked their way down into Connecticut. And then finally their passion was climbing, and the Pacific Northwest looked most like their country. And they made a trek across the U.S. to the Pacific Northwest where they settled. As the family grew, so Bruce is the youngest. He has a sister, Melinda. And then Werner Jr. and his brother Eric, who's the oldest. Werner and Martha realize you can't drag four little kids up the side of Mount Baker or Mount Washington. So they decided that kayaking would be the family sport. And they weren't a very wealthy family, and nor did Werner want to spend money on gear that wasn't very good. So they just started building everything. And Werner and the kids would go back in the family garage, and they'd build boats and paddles. And Martha would actually sew spray skirts and life vests. And it was a real – it was a real family outing for them. It wasn't just the journey. It was how they got there that was so important to them. And they spent a lot of time on both whitewater and flatwater just enjoying each other's company.
I'm really visualizing them having like the Swiss chalet sort of thing where little Bruce is coming in knickers and sewing spray skirts with mom helping. Is that a good visual? Do you think that's
I've seen lots of pictures of the family from back in the day, and I've never seen a knicker. So I would probably have to disagree with you on that. But you can visualize it any way you want.
That's how I see it. And there might even be some wooden shoes involved.
There could be, if that makes you feel better.
I think it does.
The story can be manipulated any way you want as long as you're smiling.
The theater of the mind is within your mind. The listener, I mean. That's fantastic. And I know Bruce. He's a fantastic guy. He really is one of the best in the industry in terms of not only running a company, but – you know, just a good guy. And from what I understand, hell on wheels when it comes to karaoke.
There's been some karaoke singing. And, you know, I think the one thing about Werner as a company is we are behind the scenes exactly what we tried to be in the field. So there's definitely a seriousness of who we are. And if somebody has a serious question, we're there to answer it. We feel like we offer serious product. But we're also the first ones to have a joke and go and get wet and splash around and get on the water. And back at in Salt, Washington, we are one of the most proficient production facilities I've ever seen. And we run a tight ship. As a company, we have never lost a nickel. We've been profitable every year we've been in business. And that's something I'm really proud of. We've never laid off an employee.
Wow. Something else that's pretty cool.
But in the same token, yeah, sure, there's some karaoke singing. My role now is I spend a lot of time with customer service and the production people, and they just love seeing us when we come out there. They love hearing the stories about being on the road. They love hearing the stories about where people are taking the paddles that they build. And that's what I think sets us apart. Like, our production people aren't building part A, which gets set onto part B. They know what blade they're building before the logos go on it, and they know what people are going to use it for. So what separates Werner from the rest? It's our 63 people in production. They really care about what they're doing.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned the logo. I would be remiss if I did not ask you to explain the logo. Again, I know this, but some of our listening audience might not. Explain that logo to us.
Well, if you look at our logo, essentially, when Werner and Mark that came over, they didn't speak the language. So they needed a way that they could mark their gear from everybody else's. And eventually, Martha was really passionate about doing pottery. And she would take the W for Werner over the M for Martha. And that became their couple's logo. And they would carve it into all their outdoor gear. And Martha would put it on her pottery. And as the family grew, they added the circle to symbolize family unity. And then the last piece of the puzzle is the birds. And up until recently, Werner always referred to them as seagulls. And those seagulls symbolize the freedom that kayaking gave the family. And not long ago, Bruce had told me that he disagreed with his old man and that a seagull is a filthy animal. And from this day forth, they're just birds.
They're just birds.
Like, boss, whatever you want, buddy. They're just birds.
That's right. Like, you're going to lip off to him or to Werner Sr.
Yeah. So yeah. It's again, there's just about every story's got a joke, and that's why I like where I work.
Excellent. That's good. Thank you for that. Let's see what other questions. I don't know if I have a lot of questions. Is there anything you want to say, Danny, before we get going here?
You know, I hope that when people come and check out our paddles, they're as stoked about them as I am. You know, like, there's a lot of gear that comes out every year, and it's not often that you jump into a boat or put on a PFD or pick up a paddle where you're just like, oh my goodness, this is going to make a difference. And you and I are the worst because we're so jaded. We've been getting gear either handed to us or buying it inexpensively or borrowing it or trying it since we were young people, 16, you know? And so I think, like, not to, you know, promote one of my sponsors, but when I jump into a P&H Delphin, that boat is designed exactly for what I want. That boat is great playing in the surf. And for me, I was like, immediately I knew this boat was going to make me a better paddler. And in 2003, when the Aikilos came out, I still remember that feeling in my heart when I paddled the first time. I was like, this thing is special.
I got to be honest. That was the paddle that swayed me over to the light side of Werner right there. That Aikilos was it.
I mean, it's something that's still to this day. Like, every time I pick it up, it's like, man, this thing's almost like a piece of art as much as it's a paddle. And now our new stand-up Grand Prix is just mind-boggling. I like walking around the trade shows with that thing and handing it to guys from Thule Racks or, you know, backpack companies. Anybody in the know is just blown away. And again, I have that sense of pride of, yeah, dude, we built this in the USA, man. Well, Kelly, first I just want to say on behalf of everybody at Werner and thank you and Mainline Kayak for taking some time to chat with us today. This was a lot of fun. And, you know, I think the one thing that you can't really pick up in an interview like this, as much as we want to make it so people can listen to it, is how much I love you, man. You know, and I don't want to get too deep here, but just you being part of the Werner family means so much to me. So to be able to be the first person to do this interview with you means a lot. I appreciate you thinking of me, and it's a lot of fun being out there on the road and getting on the water with you. So to all your fans out there listening to this, thanks for all your Werner Paddle support, and hopefully I'll see you on the water.
Thank you very much for your time, Danny. The feeling is mutual on this side of the Skype, I got to tell you. And it's no secret, my children call Danny Uncle Danny. And, you know, family is a big thing. The Werner family is a big thing for us. And certainly Danny is a part of my family. So there you go. Before you go, Danny, real quick, where are we going to see you in the Midwest this year?
Well, I'm really excited to open up my Midwest summer tour at Rutabaga Paddle Sports, doing a little stand-up paddle instruction. So if you are going to be going to Door County and you're going to be kind of swinging through Madison to get there, stop in and check it out. You know, I think a lot of people are taking stand-up way too serious. It doesn't need to be the next great thing. It could just be something fun to add to your sea kayaking or add to your canoeing. So check it out. And then from there, Kelly and I will be at the Door County Sea Kayak Symposium, Ooh. Which I'm really excited about.
One yep.
of my favorite events. And then from there, Kelly and I will make the trek over to the Great Lakes Sea Kayak Symposium. Bill Thompson from Downwind Sports, a good friend of mine, puts on a great event. He also does the Ladies of the Lake Sea Kayak Symposium. So if you're looking to come and play around in some bumpy water, the crystal clear, beautiful Lake Superior, make sure you check out that event too.
And I happen to know that Danny Mongo will be teaching a forward stroke clinic, something he's been working several years now on and perfecting. And man, this little guy is powerful, and it's largely due to technique. So if you got a chance to take a class from Danny, by all means, do so, because it will change your life. And I mean that in the most prolific way. Literally, he will change your religion, change your political views just with this one class. He is that good. Maybe even your sexual orientation. I'm not sure.
Well, let's hope with people that where it's at.
Exactly. That. Yeah, what are you going to do? That stymied you just a bit, didn't it?
It did.
And that's okay. All right, from all of us at Kayak Mainline, okay, me and David, who's not with us today, Danny, Werner Paddles, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll look for you down the road and on the water.
Sounds good, man. See y'all soon.
Bye. You're listening to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. If you're surfing the web, why not do it in a kayak podcast?
So what else do we have here for Kayak Mainline before we get it going, David?
We got a good debate ahead of us. Skaggs versus Rutters.
Skaggs point of contention.
Yeah.
Skaggs versus Rutters.
One of the classic arguments.
Classic argument. Would you be so kind as to tell people what a skag and a rudder really is?
Okay, so rudder is probably the most obvious one. It's the plastic or metal blade that hangs off the back of kayaks, and it helps correct your course as you're paddling along, and you can you control it with your feet. You kind of push on some foot pegs and left or right. And a skag is it's more hidden underneath the boat, and probably a little bit further up, and you have a little slider on the side that you can control it and make it go up and down.
Excellent. And so, what is the purpose, in theory, of a skag? Or do you want me to tell?
What you tell me.
So the purpose of a skeg is so the dynamic of a kayak is that it's got more resistance on the bow than on the stern.
Going through the water.
Going through the water, of course. And fluid dynamics is fluid dynamics. So it doesn't matter if you're having the kayak go through the water, or in the case when we need a skeg, if the wind is blowing across the top of the kayak. And when the wind blows across the top of the kayak, what happens is something's got to give. So if the bow has more resistance, is locked into the water more than the stern is, the stern will skip across the water and will nose into the wind.
Right, what it that gets is pushed called, downwind.
Right, that's called weather cocking.
Right.
I'll take any opportunity to say cocking. So weather cocking is the phenomenon where it goes nose first into the prevailing currents or wind or whatnot, depending on the boat design. And the skeg will drop down, add or create more resistance in the back end and stop the skeg from moving around, or stop the back end of the boat, the stern of the boat from moving around so much.
Right.
So it locks it in for the most part. Now, a rudder is supposed to do the same thing with the added benefit that you can set the trim of it as well. So you can not only put that fin down to create more resistance on the back end, but you can also set it so it will help you continue on your current prevailing course.
Right.
Now, are you a skeg or a rudder guy, David?
Well, the boat I paddle has a skeg on it.
Okay.
But my personal feeling, this, the thing, like in the paddling world, there's so many people who love to debate this. Which is better? You know, skeg or rudder, and you're either one part of one camp or the other. I mean, I paddle with a skeg, but I sit very much in the middle of I like the look of skegs in the sense that the deck is really clean and there's no hardware to get in the way compared to a rudder, but I can go either way.
Well, that's not very contentious at all.
Oh, sorry.
No, damn you. Damn you all to hell. I think you're completely wrong. In fact, I feel very strongly about both skegs and rudders. See how I didn't commit to anything, but I kept the same opinion you did, but I just made it sound better. No, I'm a skeg guy as well, and I understand all the arguments for and against, and I think we should frame those out just a little bit, but I am a skeg guy. Now, I will say that my opinion of a skeg and a rudder is that they're like an airbag in a car.
Okay. So
what I mean by that is they're great to have as a safety feature, but you hope you never have to deploy either one because that means something horrible has gone on.
Mm.
Okay. So my advice to every kid out there listening is don't paddle with either one.
Right.
If you have them, don't use them. Learn how to paddle properly. That's my big thing right there. I could care less if somebody wants to do a skeg or a rudder. I just want you to learn how to paddle.
Yeah.
And, so from a purely mechanical standpoint, skegs break, rudders break. You have more moving parts in a rudder than a skeg. Pretty much the only thing that goes bad with a skeg is the skeg cable or the skeg cord. And you can easily tuck one of those away. It doesn't take any extra parts or anything like that. So the repair kit for a skeg on a longer trip is pretty easy to stow. Rudder obviously has nuts and bolts and things like that, so that's a pain in the butt. But again, for a longer trip, if you're going to be using either one in a prolonged situation, I think a rudder is probably a better choice for longer miles.
Yeah, I would say certainly if you had a really strong crosswind or if you're crossing a really strong current, rudders are great for that because you can push on the one foot peg and crank it the rudder left or right, and it'll really help out, as opposed to a skeg, which is either just like a, you know, it's either down or up, and you don't have a lot of control in a really strong wind.
And that's true. Now, but you brought up an excellent point there. When you use a rudder, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, you have very flexible foot pads to brace against. And quite honestly, I get a lot of the power or a lot of anchoring for my torso rotation from being able to brace with my foot braces.
Right.
So I use my legs quite a bit when I paddle, more so than people imagine when they first get into the sport. You use your legs quite a bit. It's, as I like to say, you know, when you start using your legs when you're paddling, you're going to add a mile to a mile and a half on your speed. Just by being able to use your legs effectively. And with a rudder, you can't do that. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. Yes, you get to be able to set the trim and steer on a longer trip, but you also get less of a power transfer. So you're not truly getting the most efficiency out of your boat.
Right. Now, the other thing with a rudder is it's a huge, giant piece of plastic or steel that's in the water that if you don't really need it, it's quite a bit of drag.
Absolutely. And when it's up, it's quite a bit of windage.
Right, because it sticks up on the back deck and it gets caught in the wind.
Right.
I mean, but on the other side of the coin, I mean, skegs are good. They're really simple, but they're also limited in what they can do. But if you have it down and you run over a rock, the skeg gets pushed up, like forced up in the little skeg housing that it goes up in, and it can kink the cable pretty easy. So you know, it's a sensitive piece of equipment, but, sure. Yeah.
The best argument I've ever heard between skegs and rudders, was that when you have a skeg, because the skeg tucks away,
right.
And when you deploy it, it's underneath the water. When you have a skeg versus a rudder, you can deploy your skeg and never have to admit that you actually did it. With a rudder, it's either up or down. It's out or in. With a skeg, you can use it all day and then put it up just before you get to the beach. And you can say, honestly, I never used it. I quite like that.
I think with me, with the whole thing, it's like, you know, over the years, I've been able to, I can appreciate both tools. And it's just that, you know, like there's different kinds of hammers. Like you've got a big sledgehammer and you've got a ball peen hammer, you know, with the little rounded ends on it. So, but what they're designed for, they work great. So to me, the kind of the whole argument where people are real passionate about one or the other and look down at somebody else because they've got a boat with a skeg or a boat with a rudder, it's just, it's stupid. You know, people who get real passionate about that, because of the things to get passionate about, this is a pretty low end one. You know, to get
I think so, but it's very funny that we do have such passion out of it. And I truly believe that it's because people want to justify the purchase that they've made.
Oh yeah, but you can justify, I mean, there's other things that, you know, there's boat design and the material and that type of stuff that I think people could get more passionate about, but, you know. It's visual and you can see right away, so I can see why it's something that people grab onto.
Right. Well, and then there's another thing too, an argument that I've heard against rudders when you're doing rescues. And there are two kinds of kayakers in this world. Those are those that swim and those that lie about it. So their rescues are bound to happen. And I, for one, in bumpy water, don't like to get anywhere near the stern of somebody's boat if there's a big floppy machete on the back end.
Right. Yeah.
So I can see that, but that's such a small – we make a mountain out of a molehill with that. That's such a small window that we have to deal with that. Is it worth scrapping the whole thing?
Right.
And I don't think so, personally. I mean, I'm firmly in the skeg camp. I admit that. I have not paddled a ruddered boat in 12 years.
Okay.
And even then, it was just to check it out and go, oh, yeah, that's a skeg. Look at that. So yeah, I'm sorry, that's a rudder. Look at that. But I'm a skeg guy. I like the skeg, but having said that, I really never ever use it. And that's not the lie that I tell people. I really don't ever use a skeg.
But with rudders, what I'd love to see manufacturers start to do is to start to pay, if you're going to put a rudder on a boat, that's great. But I think I'd love to see them redesign rudders so that when they're sitting up on the back deck, they don't sit so high and catch the wind. And the other thing is I see so many times they'll slap the kayak manufacturer will have one type of rudder and it's the one that they put on all their boats, but yet it's a huge, big, massive, it's way over engineered for what that boat requires. And I wish manufacturers would put more effort into, you know, they just need a small little tiny rudder. Like it doesn't need to be 6 inches wide. And you look at some of the big double kayaks, man, they're huge, huge, huge rudders. And I think and the parts will stick out, and that I'd love to see them put a bit more time and finesse into the rudders from that perspective.
So you're condemning all of paddle sports manufacturers?
No.
What you're saying, you're very anti kayak manufacturer.
I would like to see them put more focus on that.
No,
that's the next step they need to start innovating.
I think it's pretty clear that you hate all kayaks. So we're going to leave it at that, I think. So, I think you're right. I think maybe a more nuanced approach towards the rudder and the skeg. But the problem is, again, it's such a small bit of kayak design. You're hard-pressed to find somebody, a kayak manufacturer, who will actually put extra time and energy into a rudder when they work just fine.
Right, right.
So,
I mean, that's the nerd in me coming out.
And that's what we love about you here, David Johnston. Nerd in you. So where are you going this week? We had a cheap plug for you?
Yeah, I'm flying out. Certainly by the time people hear this, I will have flown already. But right. So I'm flying out to Calgary from Toronto to Calgary, and I'm teaching a bunch of kayaking courses there, kayak instructor courses. So I'm really excited about that.
Excellent. That's like whitewater country, and you're teaching well, sea kayaking.
Yeah, what's interesting about it, because this is the same response that I've gotten from other people, is that there's a lot of people buying sea kayaks there, you know, for the cottage and going around the lake and that type of stuff, because there's clearly no big water, like sea kayak water, but there's lots of people buying sea kayak boats. So I think in all of Alberta, there's only three, four, five instructors. So I'm heading out there to hopefully get a bunch more certified.
But in Alberta, there's only like 1,500 people. I think that's a pretty good percentage, isn't it? It's like South Dakota for us.
I mean, yeah.
It's not a huge amount of people, but good on you. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm totally excited about it. So yeah, it's true canoe country, whitewater canoeing and whitewater kayaking. That's the bread and butter of stuff there. So I'm going to show up there and go, hey, let's talk about kayaking.
Excellent. Yeah. I like that. That'll be fun. And of course, you and I are going to see each other next at MEC Paddle Fest.
Totally. I'm really excited about that.
Beautiful Toronto.
Yeah. So that's in early June. Mm-hmm. So you're going to make sure you're going to want to come to it. Plan your calendars now.
June 8th and 9th.
Yes. On the lake. It's fantastic.
Yeah, as I've said before, it's the best value in paddle sports.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite events of the year.
Mm-hmm. In the first weekend in June demographic.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right.
Of all the first weekend June events that I'll attend, that's right up there.
That's right there. So, yeah, MEC, fantastic people. It's a fantastic time. Sunnyside Beach, June 8th and 9th. You'll see us there. You will see Eric Ogard there.
Yeah.
I believe Michael Party is making a little appearance there.
Yep.
Alec and Sharon Boyd Peshkin.
Yes. Fantastic. They're coming.
Who else is going to be there that you know of?
Well, I know I'll be there. When I saw the schedule, I just looked for my name.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm teaching a session on weather. And a session. I'm doing a whole bunch of land sessions, so I'm excited about that.
Excellent. Yeah. That's really what you want.
Yeah.
But you're a big fan of the weather,
though. I love teaching weather.
You like teaching it.
Yeah, because you know why? No one knows anything about it, so you can just make it up. And people, if you speak with confidence, people are like, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds good.
As long as it's my opinion that as long as you throw in some Latin-sounding words, and I don't mean like Latin, like habla español, Latin, like real live, true Latin
right.
words. Cumulonimbus.
Right.
I mean, that's a real weather term.
But oh, yeah. The people are all like, yows.
Yes. Yeah. You can just make stuff up, and you could say e pluribus unum.
You got to keep an eye out for that.
Yes.
Well, I've discovered my trick is because every once in a while we get someone there who's like a meteorologist, and they'll ask, you know, like a tough question because they realize that I'm all smoke and mirrors. And so they'll get their hand up and I'll try to ignore it as long as I can. And then they'll ask the tough question and I'll just be like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Let's move on. Someone up close here. Who's got a question?
You know, I find that because I live in automotive country here, a lot of engineers come to my lessons and whatnot. And when I'm doing I'll bet one out of three when I'm doing a lecture on hull design.
Okay.
I'll inevitably have somebody who has got their PhD in fluid dynamics.
Okay.
You know, and they'll step up and go, well, you know, to be fair, that's a pretty simple explanation. And I'll have to say, sir, look who I'm talking to. All right. We don't need your PhD right now, pal. Why don't you just sit back and enjoy your Lexus?
Right.
And shut your pie hole. That's how I handle it, you know.
Well, I've now started when I do these weather talks on, and I open it up with, okay, we're going to talk about weather for an hour. The goal is not to become a meteorologist. You go to school for 3 years for that. Let's keep it simple.
That's perfect.
Yeah. And then when people say, I have a question with a nasal voice like that, then I always go, oh, that's for school. You can pay someone money to go do that.
I just yell fire and then run. I think that's the best. You know, it's like the old poker thing. When you know you have the losing hand, you flip over the table, have a shootout. That's what I do. If I get too many questions, I'll feign a leg wound, or you know, I'll pretend like I got a phone call. Oh, I got to take this.
Oh, you've done that a couple times to me.
I have. Is it? Oh, yeah. Boy, I got to take this. Excuse me. Yeah, that's my MO. So MEC Paddle Fest, you're going out to Calgary. We've talked about cheetahs. We've talked about Freya. We've talked about the circus. We've had an interview with Danny Mongo. It couldn't be a better podcast, in my opinion.
Yeah, until next week.
Until next week. Thank you. You have been listening to Kayak Mainline, the podcast, the lifestyle I am one of your hosts, Kelly Blades, and as always, the lovely and talented David Johnston is with me. And we would like to say, on behalf of all of us here at Kayak Mainline, good evening
and good night.